It's time for Mac Break Weekly. We're back from Mac World, and we're ready to talk about the best of Mac World, whether the Mac Pro looks like it's now illegal in Europe, and the latest on the new iPhone. It's all coming up next on Mac Break Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Mac Break Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Mac Break Weekly, episode 336, recorded February 5th, 2013. Taking Andy Private. Mac Break Weekly is brought to you by GoToMeeting with HD Faces from Citrix, the powerfully simple way to meet and collaborate with colleagues and clients anywhere. You can share the same screen and see each other face-to-face with HD video conferencing, even from an iPad. Sign up for your 30-day free trial today. Visit GoToMeeting.com, click the Try It Free button, use the promo code MacBreak. And by Gazelle, the fast and simple way to sell last year's gadgets. Find out what your used iPad, MacBook, iPhone, Galaxy S, or other smartphones are worth at gazelle.com. And by LegalZoom.com. LegalZoom's not a law firm, but provides self-help services at your direction. Things like affordable business and personal documents you can trust. Visit LegalZoom.com and use the offer code MBW to receive $10 off at checkout. And by Audible.com. To download the free audiobook of your choice, go to audible.com/MacBreak. It's time for Mac Break Weekly. This is the show right here. This is the show where we talk about Macintosh and only Macintosh and iOS and Apple TV and anything else that Apple's up to, the cloud. Let's say hello to our special in-studio guest from Smile Software. Gene McDonald is visiting us today. I guess you didn't want to leave after Macworld Expo.
No, I didn't. it's what is it? February in Oregon versus February in California.
Yeah, better here. Yeah,
it's very nice to be here.
Also with us, Mr. Rene Ritchie from iMore.com, who was also in town, but you've gone back home.
I have, Leo. I got off the plane and I froze in spot. It was ridiculous. Mm.
It was even chilly in the Big Easy, down into the 70s.
I needed to bring that weather back with me. It's just not fair.
Oh, it's so nice. So nice.
It was only one nipple cold as opposed to two.
I don't want to know about your nipples. Andy and Notko of the Chicago Sun-Times.
Some of the waitresses were actually wearing two layers of body paint.
You know, funny you should say that. I better not go into it. Let's talk about...
Hey, Uncle Leo, tell us a story from New Orleans.
Yeah, I love New Orleans. I love New Orleans. You know, that's a misnomer that you have to do anything naughty to get beads. They're throwing them at you all the time. In fact, we get off the plane, they put beads on you. Just like in Hawaii, they put a lei on you. And you go into New Orleans, they put beads on you when you're getting off the plane. They were so happy to have the Super Bowl there because, of course, it's really big for the economy. First Super Bowl since post-Katrina. And, you know, they had one in 2002. But this was great for them. And it was great for us. What a wonderful city. We didn't have a meetup there. I didn't have time for a meetup. I was too busy drinking hurricanes. That's hard work. But really, really had a great time. It was, and now, you know, it's funny. As we're leaving, now the Mardi Gras crowd goes in there. Because Mardi Gras is next week. And they actually held off on some of the parades during the Super Bowl week. We didn't get to see any parades, but the city was ready. It did very well, except for the power outage. It did a really wonderful, wonderful job. So thank you, New Orleans. San Francisco hosted a little party of its own this past week, Mac World Expo. Gene and Renee were there, along with thousands of others.
That's right.
So, Gene, you still go, as a company, you still go to Mac World.
Yes, we do.
I'm sorry, Mac World, iWorld.
I was going to say Mac World, iWorld.
Because I bet you by next year it's just iWorld.
Yeah, I haven't heard, but it seems like they've got to be inching towards that.
Yeah. Drop that Mac thing.
Based on the number.
By the way, you're going to be Gene Donald soon.
I know. So. I Donald.
Yeah.
I Donald. Yes. based on the number of Mac versus iOS developers there, I would say that, you know, if it's not iWorld by next year, I would be surprised.
Right. Honest impressions. Good show.
It was actually. Good. It was. So you weren't there. So that was the one downside of it. You were not there.
I was planning, but something
and Andy
came
wasn't
up.
There, but Renee was there.
Yeah.
So it was Moscone West again.
Right.
But they took those big stages that they normally have for the Macworld live show, and they put them on the second level. So the Moscone West main expo floor was all exhibitors.
Huh. So it sounds like there were maybe more exhibitors than there were last year.
I don't know what the official count is. It was a little more spaced out. Like, we didn't feel it quite as crowded as last year. Of course.
Be honest. It's a dying show.
And there were less big booths.
It's a dying show. Renee, will you say it? Is it a dying show?
It's definitely a transforming show. There was no, like, usually the Omni booth smacks you in the face as you walk in the door, and that was gone.
No Omni booth?
No, they did a private event instead.
Yeah.
And there was a lot of the accessory makers had either smaller booths or no booth or just regular booths, not the big giant CES style building booths that you're used to.
Yeah.
So in some ways it was a much quieter show, but, and I think we mentioned this last week, you know, you take Steve Jobs out and you take the giant booths out and it's still, you know, fantastic people. I mean,
it's about community.
Andy, but,
yeah.
That, I always feels like when I hear that, that always feels like a cop out a little bit. Like, oh, well, it's not about the people who are no longer coming here.
You don't need Moscone, but.
Yeah.
Right.
You can do it in a small bar, it seems like.
I can tell you, we were busy at our booth the whole time. I took pictures every once in a while. And my colleagues who were actually working at the booth were busy, the whole, you know, swamped answering questions and talking to the media.
So there were a lot of attendees.
Yes,
okay.
There were. It was definitely well attended, and overall a pretty good feeling about it. Which you know, I'm always holding my breath a little bit because you never know.
And by the way, it's all the trade shows, I think, in my opinion, have been obsoleted by the internet, and it's just a matter of time. And we've seen many of them die. There used to be a big PC show, PC Expo every year. That's gone. Comdex is gone. Mm-hmm. CES seems to survive, but Macworld's shrinking.
But all the big companies are gone from CES. They all do their own private events now.
You don't. In some ways, why go to a big event like that and be swamped with every other company that's there?
Yeah.
And that's why I'm asking you, Gene. I mean, so it's still important to smile, though.
It was good for us this year. It was our 10th anniversary.
It's also a statement if you don't go, right?
Yeah.
No,
it shouldn't be a statement. It's a business decision every year. We don't say we for sure go every year. We
do have to
run
that.
The numbers and
is it worth
look
it?
At how it fits into our overall strategy. But this year in particular is our 10th anniversary. Actually, I brought you a little present.
Happy anniversary, 10
Small
years.
Small present, but that's our 10th anniversary screen clock.
I have last year's 9th anniversary screen clock, so I'm really glad to get the 10th. The Tantan. Used to be Smile on My Mac.
That's right.
And everybody remembers probably Smile on My Mac. And, of course, I should probably have said this at the beginning. You are also a sponsor of our shows with Smile Software with both PDF Pen
and Text Expander.
And Text Expander. We make an exception having you on the show. Other sponsors, don't get your hopes up. Gene is such an old friend and such a wonderful person that we make an exception having her on the show.
Sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, there was an interesting transition this year. There were no booth babes, as far as I could tell.
That's
but one booth did bring a monkey.
Booth monkey is far better, in my opinion.
I don't know if this is escalation. Will there be a cheetah next year, and then a rhino, and then an elephant? Where does this end, Leo? It's going to, Moscone is going to trample.
HyperX, which had painted women at CES, did not do it at Macworld.
Nope.
Good for them.
No.
I wonder if that was a change or if they realized that the Macworld crowd was not going to be receptive to that kind of
thing. I don't know if there was any official word that came down, but for example, Mac Keeper were the ones with the women in the extremely tight, short black dresses with the booth number on their butts. And this time they just had guys in T-shirts like the rest of us. And
it's so inappropriate.
It was that was refreshing, actually.
Yeah.
They skipped over men. They went they gave women a shot. They gave animals a shot. No one ever asked us if we wanted to be in tight
Where's
clothing
the booth? Guys.
Yeah, we didn't even get a chance.
Well, it's good.
It's just dressed appropriately for a booth.
It's just good that for once, that you can blame the smell at a geek conference on the monkey.
There was one really weird booth, Leo. There was a guy who was standing, and I'm not going to name the products. I don't want to give him any attention, but there was a guy who was a booth for 2 days with no product. And it was a really, really interesting product if it had been real. And it never arrived, and it was late. It was being shipped from China. And then finally it arrived on the last day, and nobody could touch it. And by the end of the show, he was threatening people to stay. Like, there were reporters running, like, you get away from my booth!
Really?
Yeah.
It was.
And what was it?
It was supposedly a watch that could quote unquote AirPlay anything from your iPhone to the face of the watch. And then it later it turned out it might be an Android device from China. No one was really sure because you weren't allowed near it.
Couldn't touch it.
No. But I don't know why anyone would just stand there for 2 days with no product.
What do you gain? What do you gain?
Infamy.
Infamy.
Wow.
Yeah. I was wondering if it was he had investors and part of the key to getting the next level of funding was, well, we agree that we will show at this show. And if you fail to make that deadline, then you don't get the next level of funding.
Or he lost a bet.
it seems like the last act of like an episode of Seinfeld, like on a Kramer scheme in which 6 months earlier he said, "Jerry, we can buy these wristwatches, Jerry, $12. We make a phone app for him, Jerry." And then 6 months later, okay, well they got the watches, but they don't know how to do a phone app, and they realize that AirPlay will not possibly work in that context. Yeah, it was weird.
They missed a bet because they could have had MC Hammer as their spokesperson. You can't touch this. And they really could have gotten a lot of attention throughout the
year. They got a lot of attention. It's not the kind that they were wanting. But in Macworld, I like Lex Friedman called them wantrepreneurs.
Wantrepreneurs.
Yeah. Lex was actually one of the people that was told to get away from the
threatened. Yes.
Yeah. Get away. Wow. That's really interesting.
Were tons of Twit fans there, Leo. I mean, lots of people who really enjoyed the Twit network. And there were a lot of great panels because, you know, sometimes you forget that there's the expo floor, but there's also all the conferences and panels going on upstairs. And those were really well attended. The Macworld Live stage was almost always full. They had a lot of really interesting things going on, ebooks and the future of Apple. And I did one with Gruber and Paul Kafesis and Matthew Panzerino from the Next Web on whether Apple had abandoned power users.
What was the conclusion of that?
My conclusion is that Apple isn't abandoning power users. They would rather take mainstream people and empower them to do much more on their devices. So the cost is we don't get Mac Pros, but my mom gets an iPad, and now she's enabled to use computing devices that she could never use when they were in their traditional keyboard and mouse-driven form.
So is Apple abandoning its power users?
Yes. Yes.
Let's face it. Just say it. Come on.
Yes.
Yes.
No Mac Pro for you.
As soon as your mom got into the discussion, I think the answer is yes.
It turns out that we are not delivering electricity and cable TV to the suburban and rural areas, but we're very, very proud of the level of service that we're delivering to our urban areas, the well-populated areas.
That's where the users are.
Very, very well there.
Yeah.
It's just like cars. I mean, you had to be a mechanic to drive a car, and people didn't think you should drive a car if you weren't a mechanic, and now we have cars with automatic steering and cruise control, and they'll come find you in the driving
room. I understand all of that, but if you are a editor, a graphic designer, newspaper layout person, if you're using the Mac for heavy duty work and you don't see a Mac Pro for 2 years and X serve is killed, there's really a question about how much effort is being put into OS X anymore.
The pro apps,
look at that.
iWork is 2 years old.
Yeah. So you really, at that point, you have to make a decision. If you're, and I think a lot of video editors, for instance, are faced with this decision. Do we stay with an out-of-date Final Cut? Do we update to a Final Cut that won't do everything we want? Or do we move to Windows?
Yeah, or option three, you look at how Apple has operated in the past, where they're not really a big, they don't do revolution by doing transitional things like a Windows 8, where they still have one foot in desktop, one foot in multi-touch mobile. I wonder if sometime in the next 18 months we're going to see something totally revolutionary from Apple where they're saying, yeah, I know that we haven't really in retrospect, it'll occur to us that, yeah, I guess the reason why they didn't put all that effort into putting together totally revamped apps of Final Cut, totally revamped versions of Aperture, totally revamped versions of iWork was because they were going to do a completely new interface, a completely new relationship between the way that apps interact with each other. And that's what they were putting all their effort into, not making their current products look newer, but to get us ready for the time when they do the most surprising keynote post quarterly actuals and store openings ever since the release of the iPhone.
Yeah.
Today, Apple reinvents the Pro.
Yeah. I don't know. I think you guys are a little bit living in the past, but I don't want to be too much of a negative Nanny.
So I wouldn't say living in the past. It's just that this, if they were to truly do, if they were to, Apple were truly in the position where they're saying that the numbers that we're get, that we're selling in such great numbers that there's a proven love of our products as they were, are right now. We feel no need to reinvent the iPad. We feel no need to reinvent these other products for that we can't manufacture fast enough. We believe that we're best serving our customers by just simply transitionally improving what we're doing right now. If that's really the mode that they're going into, I think that would be unprecedented since the Schindler era, and I'm not sure there's evidence that Apple would ever give up to that extent.
I think it's just such a new era that we don't. I mean, the Cook era is not any other era. It's not like the any other era. It's not like the Jobs era. We don't really know.
Right? It's turbulent.
But you know what I'm talking about. I mean, Schindler was the time when any store that wanted a separate SKU for tracking purposes, they would get a separate SKU. Apple can say no
in that regard. Is true.
I will. Exactly. And so I do think that there's something revolutionary coming. I suspect there's something revolutionary coming. That'll be very, very consistent with how they operate. However, I also do think that the clock is definitely ticking. I think that now there's an 18-month shot clock in which Apple has to say, here is where we're going in the next 5 years. Here's the great stuff that we're going to be releasing a year from now, 2 years from now. Because if a year from now we're saying, it's the new third generation iPad mini, it's 4 grams lighter, and now it's available in 4 colors. You're welcome. And we're like, huh? Because here's an Android tablet that actually doubles as a hoverboard. Every time I wake it up, it tells me how nice my shoes are. And you're just giving us extra colors?
It turns upside down twice a day, but it hovers.
What if Apple is planning to buy back its stock, take itself private? They certainly could, you know, start to do that. Their market cap's pretty high. They have been buying back stock. And as the price goes down, they buy back more. And then they get out of the rat race of having to meet quarterly expectations, of having to report to the stock market and shareholders. Then they can be innovative. Maybe the pressure is now they're so successful in iOS. Look what happened to the stock price when their margins went down this much. You know?
I think Andy nailed it before when he talked about the iterative way that they do things. If you look from year to year, there's never a huge change. But if you go back to the iPhone, the original iPhone in 2007, and then look at the iPhone 5, it's phenomenal how far they've come. And maybe pro apps haven't been developed as much. But even the iMac now is a very good pro machine. It doesn't have the card slots that someone like Alex would like. But
I do like the iMac a lot. I think the new iMac, which I just got, is pretty impressive, very fast. But it's not a pro machine. It has no slots. Yeah.
Well, that's an area in which I do think Apple sometimes takes their eye off the ball. I mean, there's no, I've said it before, so I'm not getting into detail, but there's just no functional advantage to a desktop that's that much thinner. And so when you move the card slot to someplace where you just plain can't reach it, when you remove a component that you don't use every day, but a couple times you use it a year, it's very, very handy and it costs next to nothing to put it in there. It's like, well, thank you. So now when I look dead on at my screen 12 hours a day, I will know that somewhere in the back of that, people entering my office will know what a nice thin display I am. Otherwise, I kind of wish I didn't have to have this external card reader on my desktop, so I can actually swap in cards without having to unplug my stack of hard drives to get at it.
I like that they're plucky and they're willing to try things. I mean, the buttonless shuffle was a disaster in many ways, but they tried it and then they went back to the old version. And I'm hoping the iMac is like that, where they're experimenting with laminated displays and ultra-thin housings. And, you know, maybe the card on the back is not a good idea and it'll go back with the next generation. But I'd rather that than them just, you know, keep the same model and never try unusual things.
Yeah. In the end, the signature thing we would always miss about Apple is if they stopped being a company that makes exactly the device it wants to make. Because that's Samsung does that. Samsung will make any device they think will sell.
They do some
lovely devices that way. But the signature of Apple is that no, you had no idea that we could design a device this way. We started playing with materials. We started playing with some ideas. We love this product, and that's why we're making it. We're certainly going to be selling a boatload of them, but we're making this product because we thought that a really, really super thin iMac would be a cool thing to make, and that's why we made it.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, I want to talk about the best of Macworld, because I think I see that in front of you, Gene, but the best products were of Macworld. But I'm going to put on my Beyonce brand finger lasers right now.
Nice.
My eyes.
Ooh. By the way, so this is a recipe for disaster. because they put these blue LED, they're not lasers, these blue LEDs on every seat in the Super Bowl. And then they say, whatever you do, do not open the package, do not turn them on until Beyonce sings Party People. Do not. And of course, what's the very first thing that happens? The whole place lights up with people not opening their lasers and not putting them on and not turning them on. What a recipe for disaster. You don't give 71,000 monkeys finger lasers and then say, don't use them, whatever you do. Crazy. Whoever thought
Leo,
that one up.
Leo just called NFL fans monkeys.
I'm one of them.
Big, burly, angry ones.
We're just
looks like an Iron Man villain on the
slightly stage. Evolved monkeys.
Okay.
And there's something about NFL that brings out the best in us. That's them.
Is that one of your sponsors?
That's the Beyonce finger lasers.
Brought to you by the Beyonce finger lasers.
So I went down the row and I took them from every cup just in case. Because I want to make sure I had plenty to bring home. Our show today. Actually, the Beyonce halftime show was pretty amazing.
If you like it, you should have been put a finger laser on it. Is that what it is?
Yeah, exactly. I think that's what we were supposed to do it too, was when she said put a ring on it. We're supposed to go like this. They had directions. You're supposed to go like this and then like this.
And if you didn't follow the directions, you get launched out of the crowd. You do not get to watch Beyonce if you will not do the directions.
I want to know. I was trying to see if Jesse Jackson was using his, but I didn't see. I couldn't tell. Mr. McCartney, Sir Paul McCartney was. I'm glad to report. He's into it. He's down. He's down with the finger lasers. Our show today brought to you by our friends at Citrix, who make that great go-to meeting, the way you can work face-to-face with anyone anywhere, especially during the winter time. Throats are scratchy, people stay home, flights are canceled, roads are closed. GoToMeeting lets you continue to get work done no matter where you are. It's the fast and easy way to meet with clients and coworkers online. We use it, I think, literally every day here. One of our staff is having a GoToMeeting with somebody else, often clients, often colleagues. It's great for training, collaboration. It's very easy to set up a meeting. We use it. One of the reasons we really like to use it is because if you use the Outlook plugin, it's very easy to set up a meeting that way. But you can just click a link, send it to everybody in the meeting, add it to their calendar via email, and then they just click a link to join the meeting. They can use the built-in VoIP bridge, or they'll even give them a phone number they can call in. They press the button on their camera, and boom, you're seeing them. They're seeing you. You can even present from an iPad, which is absolutely amazing. You attend a meeting from an iPad, an iPhone, an Android device. But to be able to present from an iPad and for them to see you with the iPad camera, that is amazing. That is truly amazing. So when you can't make it into the office, you can still be productive, still get things done. I want you to try this free. Just click the Try It Free button at the GoToMeeting website, gotomeeting.com. Promo code for this is MacBreak. You'll have to click that link that says promo code and enter MacBreak, one word. And you get it free for 30 days. The software on the iPhone and iPad and everything's free too. All the clients are free. It really is worth a try. Next time you're going to have a meeting, say, hey, wait a minute, I got an idea. Let's do a GoToMeeting. And you could literally, within 3 minutes, have it installed and ready to go. GoToMeeting.com. The promo code is MacBreak. It's great for your clients, too, because most of the time they don't have anything installed, but they click the link. The whole thing is handled for them. It's automatically installed. It runs, and they're in. It's kind of like magic. So Best of Macworld Expo 20... I'm sorry, Macworld iWorld 2013... Gene, did you get, you've won many times in the past. No award this year?
We got the Mac Observer's Editor's Choice Award.
Good. For PDF Pen or Text Expander?
PDF Pen for the iPhone.
The problem with Text Expander has been around so long, everybody knows. People feel like, well, I don't need to give this an award. It's like, this is like an obvious no-brainer.
Well, when we introduce the mind-reading Text Expander that you don't
then
even
you can
have
win another.
I think we'll
another.
Win a
Brain
best
Expander.
Of show.
Yeah, Brain Expander.
Brain Expander.
So what were some of the winners?
Well, I can't go without mentioning Boinks won again.
Oh, Oliver, I didn't see you. Oliver Breidenbach is here from Boink Software.
Yes.
You two are joined at the hip somehow. Wherever Gene goes, there goes Oliver. So you won for which? iStop Motion?
Yes. They did win for iStop Motion. And look,
what's this? A Gumby pen?
You can make a stop motion video. They were doing that at their booth. I think they won because they had the best swag.
And iStop Motion for the iPad is fantastic. Recently updated. Great. And just really. So you could use this. All right. I'm going to do that.
Yeah. So of course, that puts Oliver, for those who are keeping score at home, ahead of Smile in the Best of Show category.
How many have you won, Oliver? Do you know? Second in a row.
We've never won twice in a row.
Is it two-peat?
He's a two-peat, yes. Last year we were ahead. This year.
That's the way it goes.
But there were a number of other interesting products, but only two software products, iStop Motion, and then this thing called Crazy Face. I don't know if you saw that, Renee.
I did not.
I highly recommend checking out that demo on macworld.com. It's a way of animating a 2D photo so that it can like sort of be 3D rotating and talking and, you know, doing stuff with its eyes. It's impossible. When people told me that had won, I thought, what? You know, it sounded like some silly iPhone app. But actually, if you go look at the demo, it's quite sophisticated, and I can see where...
It's funny. When I type crazy face into Google, it tries to complete it with crazy Facebook status.
Yeah, that's...
All right. Here is crazy face. Is that it? That's not it.
I've got it wrong then. No, it's crazy talk. I'm sorry.
Big difference.
Yes, it is a big difference.
I got the crazy face.
Yeah. They probably wanted that, but
crazy talk.
Name was already taken. So you can actually record audio, and it has this
it's from real illusion. Well, it's real illusion.
Yeah.
.com.
Okay.
reallusion.com.
Anyway, it's.
I have a copy of this.
Yeah.
I never used it. I thought, what the hell would I do with this?
I mean, it's from the demo I saw, it's easy enough to set up like all the points of animation on the mouth and eyes and everything of a picture, and then you record some audio, and it's as if...
And it automatically makes it talk.
It was quite cool. But like I said, out of, I don't know, there's 10 or 12 awards here. Only two of them are software, which is a pretty lopsided year, you know, from the point of view of the software developers. There were some cool hardware
winners. Here's the demo reel for Crazy Talk.
Yeah.
Oh, you got to skip. What? There's ads on everything on YouTube now.
Yeah. It's...
I can't.
I think a lot of the big software, I mean, 1Password had a booth, and 1Password 4 is awesome, but a lot of, like, Fantastic Al was just walking around. They didn't have a booth this year.
Love Fantastic Al, one of my favorite programs of all time.
Right.
Yeah.
I thought, actually, you know, I'm no judge, but I think the new 1Password is so amazing, and I'm surprised they
were
overlooked.
No award for them either.
They were there. They had a booth this year. Yeah.
Oh, so this is how they do the baby on the E-Trade.
Exactly. It's scary looking.
I want it now.
I was too tired this morning to do
one. I could finally animate John C. Dvorak. That's good. Wow, look at that.
So,
That's creepy.
Yeah.
But you could see where, I mean, maybe the practical applications are not very high, but the educational
value. Well, and the technology is kind of interesting.
The technology is very interesting.
Yeah. People were talking. In fact, I got a lot of people on Facebook telling me about this Padcaster, which is like a podcasting kit.
Oh, really?
For
the iPad? Or
I guess.
No, there's
a lot of that stuff now. I mean, they're making adapters so you can put XLR mics right into an iPad. And Blue had a microphone called Nessie that you can run through an iPad. It has a built-in pop filter, built-in... built-in shock mount. It does audio processing on the thing, so that if you're not an audio expert, you can still get great-looking sound. You can get pure audio out if you are an expert, but they're doing a lot of things to make on-the-road iPad podcasting and audio of all kinds really simple.
And the other thing that I thought was really great, and I saw it also at CES, was the new Fujitsu ScanSnap iX500 that... You can now scan directly to your iPad or your iPhone, among other things. It's faster. It's just really nice looking, and I'm going to get one.
So does it via Bluetooth, Wi-Fi? How does it?
That's a very good question. I should know that, but I don't.
It's okay. I know.
They also had Oloclip there, and they have an adapter for the iPod Touch now, so you can use their lens with the iPod Touch. And they have a case, so you can mount it to a tripod.
I need that, because I have to take my Oloclip, my case off to use my Oloclip. I love the Oloclip. It allows you to do telephoto, wide angle. I wanted to bring it to the Super Bowl. I forgot to. But,
and they have a Zoom lens coming, too.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they were there. They had one of the bigger booths, and it wasn't that big.
You know, I have to say that I normally would bring a bunch of camera gear on a trip like this, and I didn't. I had the iPhone, and I used that as basically my point-and-shoot the whole time. And the one thing that you miss is the ability to get good zoom telephoto pictures. Now, this is not quite it. It's optically not perfect, but it gives you something.
Yeah, the two things you miss out on, one's a telephoto, one and the other is a good flash. I mean, I was editing a photo that I shot in 1999 with like only my second real digital camera, and it would look like garbage. I managed to dig out the original, but the fact that it had a good flash that managed to make it pop to fill in the shadows made it look. And this is the best compliment you can give to a 1999 digital camera. It looked just as good as an iPhone 5 camera shot. But that wouldn't have been possible without a good flash. So
we're at 1999, baby.
So the scan, here's the scan snap. Thank you to Poopator or Puppeter in the chat. It's expensive.
It's the same price though as the current one.
$450 is this one? Is this it?
Yeah.
No, black. I think it is it.
I think it's $500 is the list price.
This
can't be.
This is a different kind of scan.
IX500.
Yeah, that's it. The IX500.
Fujitsu makes a bunch of scanners in the SnapScan line. One of them is this really cool travel bar-sized one that costs something like $100, $130.
That's more practical. This thing is a desk scanner, but it does go right to iOS.
Everybody I know who's gotten a Fujitsu of this caliber has digitized everything they own. They start looking around their house for other things.
Get rid of that paper.
Stop moving slow enough.
Yes.
And the advantage of this is it's a sheet feed. So if you have big, long documents or whatever, and business cards.
It does double-sided at the same time.
Oh, it does. Yeah. Oh, that explains
it. In other words, it takes the pain out of being paperless. Anyway, this
takes
is my year.
Takes the pain out of being paperless.
I should sell that
Gene,
to them.
Gene, you're working for the wrong guy. You need to go to Fujitsu. Business card scanning software included. It also will scan right to Evernote or Dropbox or SugarSync or Google.
There was an interesting theme for enterprise stuff this year, too. A number of companies are starting to try to test enterprise. Ecamm, who had a booth right next to Smile, is doing Printopia Pro so that you can easily deploy your iPads and iPhones and print in offices where the old printers don't support it. And Riedel, who does documents and a lot of business apps, they're going right around Apple's rather poor enterprise support and making their apps work on a subscription basis. So you just get the free app and you subscribe. You can do all sorts of enterprise deployments.
I like
productivity
this.
Apps.
If you buy the ScanSnap, then Amazon suggests that you buy this red rubber stamp that says scanned.
so that you can file away the piece of paper you just scanned in.
Scanned.
I think if that algorithm were smart, it would also sell you a shredder next to that.
Yeah. Scanned and into the shredder. Boom. That's pretty funny. Yeah, they have a variety of scan snaps. And as you said, Andy, they have a littler one for the But that's interesting that should win a scanner.
It was pretty impressive, and they were always busy. And they were another one of the big booths. But, it was. And there was also the Mac IT conference going on upstairs. Yep. I didn't get to check that out at all, but there were a lot of heavy-duty IT-type people there that I know.
I really do think that the conference track is really the thing that keeps these things alive. Yeah. That's something you can't do really as well online. I mean, you've got lynda.com and lots of places like that. But this is somewhere to go see. And it becomes about, in some ways, celebrities. To see Renee Ritchie and John Gruber on a panel and hear what they think about the future of pro apps, that has some value that you just aren't going to get. Whereas to see the latest ScanSnap, I just learned everything I wanted to about it by going to the Amazon page in about five seconds, right?
That's They had an iBooks panel with Serenity Caldwell from Macworld, Scott Simpson, who used to run iBooks.
I love Scott.
David Sparks was on that. Yeah,
the Tidbits team were on it. I mean, to get their knowledge on eBooks all on one panel, you can't get that anywhere else.
No.
That's true. And they've made this change as of last year. They have what they call the iFan Pass that was $75 to $100. And that meant it was affordable for
much
many
more affordable
more
than it used than
it
to
used
be.
It used to be like about $300 for a similar lineup of that would then be mostly
I think that's
empty.
The future.
And then the iFan, I know that future. Those rooms were full.
And doing them regionally as our local North Coast Mac user group does here. I imagine someday, I dream of a time where there'll be regional iWorld Macworlds all over the country. So you don't have to fly to San Francisco. You can go to St. Louis or go to Boston and have these same kinds of events. That's how it – but then they're basically now kind of super user groups.
Yeah.
Well, right? not only that, but it's useful just in the sense that here is 1 4- or 5-day period in which the entire Apple/Mac community has agreed that we're going to be in this city. You know, right. for this 96-hour period. Last year, for instance, I was talking to a lot of people who run PR agencies, and they're saying last year's show at least was an incredible bargain for their clients because it's not years gone by when Adobe was there, when Apple was there, when Steve had his keynote. Every journalist who was sent there to cover the show would write about Apple and they'd write about Adobe and they'd write about Microsoft. Now, essentially, everybody can get about 50 minutes worth of time from everybody who writes about anything, an Apple, iPhone, iOS, or Mac. And so it's a very target-rich environment. I'm not surprised you don't see more people like a Fantastical just saying, well, it's not worth our time to get a booth. It's definitely worth our time to get a hotel room nearby,
right.
And just make the calls around and find out who's going to be in town, and then give them a good 20-minute or half-hour demo of what we're coming up next.
Does WWDC? I guess it doesn't supersede because it's really only for developers. So the real people don't go to that.
Well,
it has some of that going on. I mean, when I go to WWDC, I am a developer. I am not, but it's not. It's not politically very, very smart for me to try to go beyond the public keynote day. Right. But even so, like if I'm there, I'm definitely staying there for like 2 or 3 days after the keynote, because just like with Macworld, iWorld, everybody who does anything in the Mac space and iPhone space is going to be there in that one space. And so breakfast, lunch, dinner, snacks, runs to get comic books, all of those things are opportunities to like hang out with people who are at the very minimum going to be very, very interesting to talk to. At best is going to show me something that they couldn't show me except for, hi, I provisioned this on my personal device and you're to forget that you saw this as soon as you see me run this thing.
We're talking with Andy Yanako of Chicago Sun-Times, from SmileSoftware.com, G. McDonald, and from iMore.com, Renee Ritchie. Our kind of our Macworld, iWorld summary, and some other Mac news coming up in just a little bit. Some actually bad news, Mac news coming up in just a little bit. But first, a word from our friends at Gazelle. Here's the good news. You don't have to be stuck with those old gadgets. If you've got an iPad 3, the third generation, and you want the iPad 4, the fourth generation, here's the way to make it easy. Gazelle.com. They'll buy your old iPad. In fact, let's just see. Third generation iPad. Which is it, AT&T or Verizon?
Verizon,
okay.
That's what I got.
Gene, you ready to get rid of it, Gene? It's LTE?
LTE.
Have 32? 64? Mm-hmm. All right, let's get an offer for Gene and her old iPad. It's in good shape, $290 bucks. It's going to get you halfway towards your new fourth generation.
I actually sold my iPhone 4 to them.
It's a good deal. Did it work? How'd it work?
Very well, yeah. And you can decide to get paid in like an Amazon card. You get a little bit more.
5% more with the Amazon card. That's the pro tip.
Spend the money Amazon.
They'll do PayPal. They'll do check, of course. But the Amazon gift card, I think, is a good way to do it. So the deal is they pay the postage. So really what you should do is go through your old gadget or get everything, you know, and get quotes. Those quotes are good for 30 days. You have 30 days to take advantage of that. So if, for instance, you said, I just can't decide, you could at least find out what it's worth. And by the way, the sooner you do it, the more the value, because the price is not going up.
I should have done
that. The price is going down, Gene.
Yes.
On all this stuff. So it really is worth getting a quote now and deciding later, do I really want to do this? Once you do push the button, say, okay, I got everything I want to sell, they'll send you an appropriately sized box, postage paid, right?
Yes.
You throw it in the box.
As easy as could be.
Mail it, and they get you a check. Was it pretty quick?
Yeah, within a week.
They also wipe your data, which is nice. I know a lot of people.
I wipe my own, but I knew that they do that.
A lot of people, I think, in our audience go, well, I'm not going to trust. But really, truthfully, their data, it's part of the, they're checking to make sure that the product is in the condition you said it was. They want to make sure it's functioning and all that. But in the process, it's just automatic. They wipe the data, and yeah, you can trust them. In fact, I'll tell you what, let me see. I think they've had 500,000 customers, paid out over $50 million over the last few years. There's a lot of people. You really can trust these guys. I am a big fan of Gazelle. We've used it. Gene, now, I didn't know that, has used it.
I used your code, I think, too.
Well, there is no code. There's no code. So that's the beauty of it. They just say.
I think I told them.
Tell them, though.
About
if
it
they ask
Mac
you,
Break Weekly.
Say Mac Break Weekly. Say Gene McDonald told me. SmileSoftware.com. Gazelle, Gazelle.com is definitely the way to get money for your gadgets. So this is the bad news, at least if you're in Europe, but I think it tells you something a little bit about Apple's intentions as well. You probably knew this by the time you were doing the panel, Renee. Apple is discontinuing the Mac Pro in Europe as of March 1st because it does not live up to regulatory standards. Normally, if you really felt like that was a product you wanted to sell and it was selling, you'd probably update it to fit the regulatory standards. But they're saying, nah, we're just going to – nobody wants this.
It's one of two things. It's either that it's not financially enjoyable for them to update the current model to those specs, and that's either because they're going to discontinue it at some point or because they are working on that next generation thing that Tim Cook mentioned in passing maybe last year that Apple is working on. Mm-hmm. But if they have a Pro machine in development for towards the end of 2013, they may not feel like spending any engineering resources or taking any engineering resources away from that to update something for the EU right now, given the volume they sell.
And, it would be telling if we knew what was not compliant, but Apple's not saying, and it's not obvious what is not compliant.
No, micro USB.
Yeah, right.
It's actually the fans. The fans need a grate that when you reach your hand into an open PC that you don't smack your fingers on.
Oh, come on.
Yeah.
Talk about state. No seatbelts on the Mac Pro. Now, well, and the reason I wanted to know that, thank you, Chad. I didn't know that. The reason I wanted to know that is that tells you how difficult it would have been for Apple to fix it. And in this case, not at all. Like 5 cents worth. I mean, you could staple some screen on it. You could actually inexpensively retrofit existing Macs if that's all it is. Where did you hear that? Because this is not in this 9to5 Mac article.
We covered this on Twit, and that was the issue that was
It says, up. The new product certification standards in Europe appear to be mainly connected to internal components such as power supply parts and wiring, according to 9to5 Mac, and this was written in January 31st, Mark Gurman, about 5 days ago. It's unclear which aspects of the new standards are not met by the current Mac, so maybe some later stuff came out. If it's really that, then what do you say, Renee Ritchie?
Now, again, I just don't think that given the volumes they sell, they want to take any effort whatsoever to update a product that is that old. And they'd rather, have a habit of that. They are relentless in pursuit of the future, and they will ditch anything past to the detriment of a lot of existing user bases. But that's just the way they operate.
Well, I'm really pleased that children in Europe will no longer lose fingers to Mac Pro fans. That's been a great scourge. And
They also they have no way to make noisemakers. Are they tiny, tiny little baseball cards? But yeah, think about what Apple's doing with the Mac Pro as it is. There is a flourishing market in Hackintoshes. People who are sick and tired of waiting for Apple to update it, and they're building their own out of Intel components. And Apple is letting that simply happen. That's how aggressive they are in not caring about updating the Mac Pro in 2012. So I agree with Renee. I'm not sure if this means they're necessarily abandoning the Mac Pro. I think it means that there is no point in even taking minimal effort to make this device comply, given that this is not a device that sells tens of millions per quarter, and we've got something new coming out soon anyway. Why ruin our vacations?
Yeah, wouldn't want them to do that. This is from Macworld UK. The new requirements necessitate fan guards and some increased protection on the ports on the electrical system, neither of which sound like very complicated or expensive updates, but hey, what the heck?
Also, the CPU needs to have a two-hour lunch break for every 12 hours
it's
of uptime.
It's working too hard.
And a second Mac Pro that's to supervise the other one.
Apple is trademarking the design of its retail stores, probably in response to the fact that the Microsoft stores look exactly the same.
And the Samsung stores.
The Microsoft store at Prudential Place is actually horizontal instead of deep.
And they don't have a genius.
Instead
of the genius bar, what do they have? Something like the know-it-all bar? What is it that they have? Something like that.
They have the compliance bar.
they have the tables on the left and the shelves on the right, not the other way around.
The description of the trademark includes a clear glass storefront. Well, come on. Surrounded by a paneled facade. And within the store, an oblong table with stools set below video screens, flush mounted on the back wall.
Yeah, good luck with that.
Now, you do remember that in China, there was an Apple store that wasn't an Apple store that looked exactly the same. But that was also selling iPhones that looked exactly the same and non-iPads.
The employees did not know that it wasn't an Apple.
They didn't even know. No. They thought they worked for Apple.
I keep wishing I could get more information about these iStores that you sometimes see. Like when we were in Bermuda on a deep cruise, there was a store that you walked in and it looked exactly like an Apple store. And I'm talking about the exact same furniture, exact same fixtures, exact same products. Not only the exact same Apple products, but the exact same non-Apple products configured and set up in the exact same way with a Genius Bar in the back, not called the Genius Bar. And it was so close to an Apple store that I was trying to figure that there was a lot of theories going around because I'd never seen something like this before. And one theory going around is that, of course, in Bermuda, you couldn't have a corporate owned store in that country. And this was a way for Apple to have a presence there without having an official presence there. And that's why they kind of were able to rip off everything. But that was just something that, unfortunately, it's one of those things that's really, really tough to get an answer to. The only time you will ever get a clear answer is when people with every reason whatsoever not to talk to somebody who writes for a living decides not to write for someone who writes for a living, including the owners of the store, including Apple, including everybody.
Yeah.
They had
the same products on display, but they didn't actually have actual products to sell because the iPad, I forget what's it, the iPad just came out then, or one of the iPads, and everybody was coming into that store in Bermuda to look at the iPad, but they didn't actually have any to sell.
So it's not illegal. I do refer you to the famous 1992 Supreme Court decision, 2 pesos versus Taco Cabana.
Ay caramba.
In which the Supreme Court said, in fact, that 2 pesos was able to protect how their restaurants looked so that cheesy Taco Cabana ripoff would not fool consumers.
I like Taco Cabana.
You've been to a Taco Cabana?
Yeah, it's a Texas thing. It's a Tex-Mex fast food restaurant.
This is the precedent, though, that trade dress may be protected under the Trademark Act.
We don't want to stifle innovation of chimichangas. We just think that they should invent their own chimichangas.
Actually, Taco Cabana.
Look for the world.
Taco Cabana was the original.
No.
2 pesos was copying Taco Cabana. Let's get that straight.
Taco Cabana is in the right here.
Yes. Yeah. Taco Cabana, the first, was opened in San Antonio in 1978. And it's trade dress, a festive eating atmosphere involving interior dining and patio areas decorated with artifacts, bright colors, paintings, and murals. This sounds exactly like the Twit commissary.
You're in a lot of trouble, Leo.
The stepped exterior of the building is a festive and vivid color scheme. See, it's so vague, but the Supreme Court upheld it. And I think they say, well, this is what Taco Cabana looks like. This is what 2 pesos looks like. Obviously, they're stealing it.
And I think that's everything. When you file one of these, you ask for the moon, and then you let them whittle away at
it. Right. Believe me, I know all about that. Someday we'll be able to talk about that. The million dollar question in this instance is just how close a competitor can come to design without infringing. So the next step is for Apple to sue somebody, as always. There is a new... I understand you covered this on the Super Bowl. There is a new appstore.com vanity URL. Did you see the ads that said appstore.com/Star Trek app, for instance?
It's not really new. It's just they made a big deal out of it at the Super Bowl. I think the Salesforce guy, Benioff, gave it to Steve
Mark
Jobs
Benioff.
A while ago, and they've been using it. So basically, anytime you upload an app, Apple takes the name of your app, removes any illegal characters, and if you put that appstore.com/that name, it just works.
appstore.com/pdfpen.
That should work.
And
it'll work for the names
son
of apps,
a gun.
The names of companies, and if there's a conflict, it'll bring up a search page to show you the multiple results for that term.
This is good to know. From now on, we'll have to do this when we give out apps. It's not just for Super Bowl anymore.
Yeah. The URL shortener part is nice, but it also lets Apple be competitive. I mean, originally people would put the name of their website, then it was search AOL keyword, and then it's Facebook/, and now Apple has something that they can use in those kinds of marketing campaigns. So it gives them a good fight for mindshare back.
Let's try it. App store.com/iStopMotion. Give Oliver a little external protocol request. Remember my choice for all links of this type. Thank you. And now we go to the App Store and... Uh-oh. That's wrong. Wait a minute. Let me try it again. App Store. I think you got a trade dress infringement, Oliver. I stop motion. I typed I stop motion. And I get my stop action. Once again, the search in the App Store is so sucky that it now applies even to that shortened.
Try Twit, Leo.
Oliver, I'd be mad if I were you.
I think he is.
go talk to your friends at the App Store. Had you done this before, Oliver? Yeah, you knew it. Twit works. AppStore.com/Twit works. So, wow, that's interesting. Can you specify iPad or iPhone, or I guess not? It's just going to...
Well...
It's doing a search, it sounds like. I wonder if that's what it's doing.
It's
it does if there's a conflict. If it's only one result, it gives you that one result. So if there's only one smile, it'll give you the company. If there's only one PDF pen, it'll give you the app. If there's multiple things,
yeah, but
it'll
give you a search result. It got it wrong. I entered I stop motion, and it gave me my stop action.
I don't know how.
That's exactly how that crappy search works in the app.
There are some scammy apps that try to game the system by putting names or keywords, or they prepend stuff that gives bad results. Oh, App Store.
Well, they are much better looking than the previous long URLs with the ID number
like
and all that.
I got those. That's good. It's really nice to have those.
And they fit on posters and in commercials really nicely.
Hey, if you try to use Java on your Mac one more time, the second time in a month, Apple has blacklisted the web plugin. This is a nice feature that was added, I think, in Lion, but maybe it was Mountain Lion. A kind of a malware containment vessel that the Apple has used a few times, and it just blacklist. You can, and it doesn't have to push out an update or anything to blacklist this stuff. How do you know? Does anybody know how this blacklist gets updated?
It's part of their malware. They introduced an anti-malware feature. I think it was in Lion, where they keep a list of things that, like a malware removal tool, very similar to what Microsoft has had for years. And then they can flip a switch and say that this is now part of the malware program, and it handles it as part of the OS.
And it warns you. It'll flag it. It'll block the plugin. So what it gives Apple the capability, which I think is very interesting, to block a plugin automatically to protect its users.
Yeah, they had a lot of Java targeting as a dot update to Lion too, as Java became a bad problem and morphed into an insane problem.
So the question is
when you got the government telling you that for God's sakes don't stick your tongue in a light socket and don't run Java on any device, that's a problem.
Yeah. So this technology is called XProtect, but I'm not sure how. I understand that it does, but it doesn't. You don't have to have an update to get the XProtect list. Plist updated somehow, or do you?
I think you do, because although in order for it to know to deactivate it, it has to receive some sort of ping from Apple. So if you were offline, you wouldn't.
You wouldn't. But I'm saying you won't necessarily get we have an update for you kind of stuff. It does that silently, right?
Yeah, it's a push, I think.
Yeah, I think that's really clever. Does anybody feel like that's something bad?
No, until there are a lot of businesses that use Java for like remote access stuff or collaborative and meeting stuff. But as yet, I haven't heard any widespread complaints that any of Apple's malware detections have stopped the wheels of progress. So it's just nothing but upside win. And everybody else doesn't use Java at all. Everyone uses JavaScript as in parts of live pages, but it's incredibly rare that anybody has to actually activate a Java plugin to get a web browser to do anything these days. If anything, Apple's more Apple would be willing to do this not only as a way to keep its users safe, but also to underscore said, well, you see, that's why we keep telling you HTML5. That's why everything should be HTML5 and nothing should be a plugin. I mean, you know. We'll help you, keep you safe, but this is why we keep plugging HTML5.
So this is good. I'm reading from Intego, and this actually started in Snow Leopard, how the anti-malware function works. It does. It's driven by this xprotect.plist file. I'm trying to figure out how it does the Apple.
I don't believe they install Java by default either anymore.
No, they don't. You have to go out and get it. So,
not only that, but if you install it and you don't use it for X number of weeks, it automatically deactivates it. So,
yeah. Right. Yeah. No. And Safari always says, "Hey, are you sure you wanted to run this?
Are you really sure?
As it should." So this is Leander Connie in Cult of Mac has everything you wanted to know about Apple's new antivirus spotter. This was back in Snow Leopard days, 2009, and there's a long article from Intego, at least about how it worked then. And I'm just scanning it to see.
It says software update
will push it out, but maybe they've changed that because I think we don't get that many software updates, do we?
No, I think it's a current process now. It just keeps current
whatever
the latest update is.
That's what I think. Yeah. Yeah, Windows doesn't do that. Windows will do it in the second Tuesday patch. They'll update their anti-malware scanner. But I think the ability to push out within seconds, as soon as it's identified, an update to every Mac user is really good.
And it's a huge improvement. Remember, it used to be days, we'd go weeks or months after a known exploit was in the wild before an update would happen. So they're really, I mean, they used to be so far behind Microsoft, and now they have Gatekeeper. You can turn off unsigned apps if you want to. They have random addresses.
This is really good.
Malware, yeah.
And notice that we did see a kind of a blip about a year ago in malware for Apple, and it's gone. Yeah. You don't hear about it anymore. They've really taken the steps they need to protect us. I think
they clamped down on people talking about malware on the Mac. You're right.
No more stories, notice. Zero.
Well, see that's why this file --\\\\.
Well, let's talk about that.
Is brilliant.
Let's talk. We're going to take a break and we're going to talk about that because I'm going to do it. Has it been fixed? No, I'm going to do it. But I'm going to wait till after the commercial. Okay. LegalZoom.com. Let's talk about them. I wish I had them right now. Actually, they're not a law firm. They're not a law. They're basically let you do your own legal work. There's a lot of simple stuff you can do yourself. Walking through their step by step. Questionnaires on LegalZoom, things like trademarks.
That's what I'm doing right now.
Yep.
I'm trademarking OMG Chat.
You should.
Like right now.
Yeah. Well, you might want to finish the show before
Yeah.
Okay. Go ahead.
Everybody's got to finish.
There's a whole, but it's very simple and it's like $95, right? To trademark.
I've answered about seven questions so far and I'm into the usage area.
I think there are a lot of people who are watching who have blog names that they haven't really thought about protecting. Copyrights, trademarks, patents, they'll do NDAs. So if you've got something you want to show around, you want an NDA, you can do that. Of course, I would say probably the number one thing people do on LegalZoom.com, the top two are forming their own LLCs. That's what I did. And doing their wills.
I was going
to
say
wills. If you don't do a will, the government says, okay, well, we'll figure out what to do with your stuff. And guess what it's going to do? absolutely. You can do wills. You can do living trusts.
I'm looking that up.
For $69, do a will.
Really?
Yeah. You don't have a will? You really ought to. I've
been on my to-do list.
Yeah, yet. See? This is the thing. I think this is a lot of us are like that. Well, I'll do it. But what you don't, then you go, oh, but I'm going to have to find a lawyer. I'm going to have to pay hundreds of dollars an hour. No, this is much simpler. And by the way, and they've added this, and I think this is really good, they now have a legal plan where you can talk to an attorney. They vet them. They choose them in each state. You can also get reviews of those attorneys. So you can pick one that you really like. And they have fixed pricing. So if you do feel like, gee, I'd really like to ask an attorney about this one thing, you can also do that. So an extensive network of attorneys. They have very inexpensive, very simple, and very effective solutions for a lot of the things that you don't need an attorney for. Wills, trusts, trademarks, LLCs. I literally did this. TWiT is an LLC done that way. And by the way, since then, we have now legal representation as you have to and as you get bigger and so forth. And we're still operating under that basic LLC. It's fine. No problem.
That's great. And says you can do a will in 15 minutes.
Yes, that's fast. I did the LLC so fast. It was a Delaware LLC. I think that was one thing where I wasn't sure and I might ask. I had an attorney say, well, California, Delaware, and he gave me the pros and cons. I said, fine, continue through. You're going to love this. Go to LegalZoom.com. Now, there's one thing I'd like to ask you as a favor. use our offer code MBW and you'll get $10 off. People aren't doing that. And I want you to please do that so that we get credit for this. Because I know a lot of you are using LegalZoom and you're saying, well, $10, I don't. Please, it's not for the $10, it's for us. And $10, it's not, you know, nothing to sneeze at. $10 off if you use the offer code MBW when you use LegalZoom.com. You absolutely should trademark OMG Chat.
Yeah.
And OMG Craft and OMG yeah. Everything.
Yeah.
You should own that.
Yeah. I don't want anyone else to come up underneath me.
And believe me, I know a little bit more now than I want to about all of this stuff. And it's if you don't protect yourself, you'll deeply regret it.
Yeah.
LegalZoom.com makes it easy. There's no reason not to. All right, so I have typed in my browser. Don't tell me not to, because I'm going to do it.
Leo.
I bet you all did it, didn't you?
I bet
you all did it. I typed file colon slash slash slash, right? Is that right? And then I hit return.
Capital F.
It has to be capital
F. Oh, okay. Capital F-I-L-E. Now, that shouldn't do anything bad. Uh-oh.
Uh-oh. And it crashed.
It crashed. But it didn't crash the whole system. It just crashed Safari.
It sometimes crashes multiple apps for me. Not okay. always, but sometimes.
Chrome. It crashed Chrome.
Yeah.
So it doesn't crash the whole computer.
Just crashed my notes. But
why?
All
why,
apps.
Mommy? Let me type it into a Spotlight. F-I-L-E colon slash slash slash. Then what happens? Nothing. In fact, it finds a Walt Mossberg column. No, it did. It crashed Spotlight. And it rebooted. No, it didn't reboot the machine. So you can crash a machine with this?
What good is it?
No. I've had cascading failures, but I haven't had a whole machine go down.
Yeah. Let me try connect to server. Let's try that. File colon slash 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 connect. Nope. Oh, that's not good. No, so far it's nothing horrible. It just crashes a program. So why?
It's this infrastructure infrastructure in the basic text edit engine where as you type Mac OS is looking for things that you might want to find later on, like things that look like phone numbers, things that look like addresses, things that look like discrete bits of data. So it's a service that so many different apps use, pretty much every app uses, when it's trying to just simply parse text that you're inputting. And so I don't know the nature of the bug, but that's exactly what's happening. And it's funny because I was going to say that this is a sign that unfortunately bugs are like evolving like DNA, because now that part of their survival is to never ever be found, never ever to be talked about. So this is a bug that has configured itself so that whenever you're about to send an email to somebody saying, hey, I found this bug, if you type file colon slash slash slash, boom, your email app crashes. You can't report the bug. And so it's allowed to propagate for another generation.
Right.
The age of the machines is upon us.
It's a transcription error that will soon lead to the evolution of all machine kind.
Some people thought it was autocorrect, but it looks like it's deeper than that because it hits data detector. It hits whatever Apple uses to sniff and find and try to do smart things with the text that you enter in their default text entry box.
iLover says, but really, who types that? That's not the issue, although it is kind of amazing it was discovered because somebody must have typed it at some point and said, whoa, whoa, did you see what just happened? But, Chad, where are you going to do it in iMessage?
Yeah, so the if you really want to, so it just crashed. If you really want to troll someone,
it crashes without it even hitting return. It just crashes.
Right, just crashes. So
what if it works with Skype? Hang on.
If you really want to troll someone, send someone an iMessage that says capital F file slash slash slash, and it will be saved in their history, and so they won't be able to open up iMessage without it crashing.
It doesn't do anything in IRC, unfortunately. but, okay, now I'll tell you, having done security now for 15 years and listened to Steve, that is a crash. You might say, oh, big deal. A crash is an app. A crash is always a precursor to an exploit, because if you can crash it, then you're in the first stages of being able to make an exploit that will get it to run arbitrary code, believe it or not. It depends on the crash, but almost always these are buffer overruns. They go, okay, I can overrun the buffer. Now let's store something in the buffer and then do it, and you very often get an exploit out of that. So it's usually something
jailbreakers are excited.
Yeah, something to pay attention to. Jailbreaking, exactly. If you can execute code in memory, you're golden.
And speaking of which, the new jailbreak launched right after the Super Bowl, Evasion.
Then that's for iOS 6.1?
6 and 6.1, yep.
Awesome. Does it work? Is it good?
Yeah, it works great. It's incredibly clever jailbreak because Apple's made it harder and harder to get around.
By the way, I want to point out, because there was a lot of misinformation about this, the Librarian of Congress made unlocking a phone illegal, stupidly.
If you're under contract.
If you're under contract.
Yeah.
But it is still completely legal, and they've said this several times, to jailbreak. It is not. Apple doesn't like it.
They've said so explicitly.
They've explicitly made that legal.
And they updated their knowledge base today to remind you of the perils of jailbreaking.
It's so dangerous. If you jailbreak your phone, the terrorists win.
Yes.
They virtually said that.
Tinkerbell dies.
They virtually said that because they said because
peace
then
without honor.
You could get bad stuff on your system and it could affect the whole network, cell phone network. It could bring the nation down and then you have a blackout at the Super Bowl. You see? By the way, rumors about that blackout. The first thing I thought is, boy, we've been having a lot of I was one of the people who got hacked on Twitter, got the email that day from Twitter saying, hey, your password's been changed because you got hacked. Wall Street Journal, New York Times, Chinese hackers been attacking us very aggressively. And then, coincidence, the power goes out at the Super Bowl due to a computer failure. Yes, an automatic trigger. Rumors flying. Rumors flying now about what
very
that's
Tom
all about.
Clancy.
And nobody will say, of course, it's the last thing you're going to hear Homeland Security say, yeah, we got hacked.
You want me to get Adam Carolla on the line? Or not Adam Carolla.
Adam Curry.
Sorry.
I know what Adam thinks. It wasn't voodoo. We know that. They've checked that out. And it wasn't the Niners. Although it worked out a little bit in their favor. And, I don't know. I think that, frankly, the Super Bowl is a high-profile target for any kind of action like that. And if it was computer failure, which we do, I think we do know that, there's a surge or something happened and the computers shut down the power to protect the system. If you're a hacker, don't you want to take down the Super Bowl?
You are not testing out an EMP for Gizwiz, Leo. Will you?
I am not. I am not.
The thing is, you also want to have credit for taking out the Super Bowl.
Well, you would announce it.
Yeah. Even if you only took out half the lights,
right,
that's a win. And
you would announce
definitely
it.
Jump on
you
that.
You would announce it. So that's true. Nobody's taking credit yet. Actually, that's a good question. Why not? Wouldn't you want to take credit? I mean,
what's that old saying? Never address to conspiracy what you can chalk up to stupidity.
Yeah.
It's probably much easier to believe someone fell asleep on the wheel.
They typed
or not
file colon slash slash yes. slash.
That's it.
I think it was
on Twitter and tried it out.
It was a boon for Twitter because Twitter, from that moment on, became totally hysterical.
I sent out more tweets in that 1 hour than I had sent in 3 years of Twitter. I sent out 20 or 30 tweets. Boom, boom, boom. Because I had nothing else to do.
And Twitter had one of the worst blog posts ever about their hack because they said, you know, Java has been a problem. The Wall Street Journal has been a problem. Oh, by the way, we got hacked. So you should really go ahead and remove Java from your system.
Uh-huh.
Oh, it was a very like Apple style response. It was like you would think that the most direct way to do this blog post is, oh, by the way, we've uncovered there's a security problem where people have been trying to where some accounts got compromised. Please, everybody, change your passwords. Instead they title it "Keeping Our Users Safe."
Yeah,
you're welcome.
Yeah, it was apparently low numbered Twitter users, people in the first quarter million. Which means if you became a Twitter user before the middle of 2007, I think you would have been affected. I was.
Yeah. Me too.
Yeah.
Which is annoying because Twitter is one of those things I sign on to like all the time. I change my password sometime between 12 and 20 times a year. And I wasn't quite at the end of my cycle for this one password. And I wasn't ready to think of a new one yet. And so now on every device, it's like, ah, damn it. Okay. It has something to do with trees because I was looking out the window at the time and I saw, what did I see? Damn it. And then I forgot about the stupid thing I was going to tweet anyway, thus saving countless people lots and lots of frustration of seeing something stupid I was going to tweet. So
I just logged in. I hadn't changed it. By the way, what doesn't happen is all the tokens, all the apps that you've already approved continue to work. So you may not even notice until you try to log into the Twitter website.
But, yeah, that's salted passwords. They weren't just plain text passwords.
Yeah, I think it's very unlikely that anybody got hacked because they were both encrypted and salted. Mm-hmm. It's very unlikely anybody got anything out of it.
But still, it's a reminder of two different things. Number one, that there are a lot of people who are using the same password on multiple accounts. And if you have the same password on Twitter and something else, not only change the Twitter password, but change someone else's password. Change that other password, too. And don't do that same thing again. And the other thing is that – You know how it is, like when you're trying to find the right Twitter client because you've just got a new phone, you might have downloading like 8 or 9 and trying a whole bunch of different things, or maybe you've tried out a whole bunch of different web services. It's not until you go onto that page that shows you all the apps that have been approved for access to your Twitter credentials and Twitter feed. They're like, oh, I use maybe 7 of those 38. Perhaps I should deauthorize all the ones I'm not using it.
Yeah.
Give them I was amazed. Token. Yeah, it was amazing until I. Oh, I'm sorry. Renee, that's also an excellent point. Now they have a limited number of tokens they can use, so you're actually like being a token hoarder.
Here's a big change for the folks at Instagram. You can now they have a website. Only 2 years and $1 billion later. Actually, I thought that was a brilliant move on their part not to have a website, and forcing you to have the app on your iPhone and then eventually on your Android phone to look at your. Pictures and other people's pictures, but it kind of you could click a link on Twitter and we'd open a page, but there was no way to browse any. But now Instagram actually has browsability, so I can go to my Instagram, I can look at the pictures that people have posted on here, and it just this is just like what you'd get on your iPhone. Look, here's an interesting one. Snoop Dogg apparently has found an unusual blend at Starbucks. I don't. Is that Kenyan? Kona? I don't know.
And they took out their Twitch integration, so now it's even better to go to their website.
You kind of has to, don't you?
Yeah.
God, I hate it when companies do that because it's just disadvantaging their users for competitive purposes.
Well, see, Leo, Twitter doesn't want you to go to clients, and Instagram doesn't want you to go to Twitter, and nobody cares what we want.
Nobody cares what we want. The people who have posted our own content onto these services, you know. Dell has agreed to be acquired by Michael Dell. And Silver Lake, they are going to go private. This thing I was suggesting Apple do, actually Dell has successfully done, or seems to be. They announced today that they're going to go private in a $24 billion deal led by Michael Dell and the investment firm Silver Lake, the biggest leveraged buyout since the financial crisis. Now, Dell's only $24 billion. See, Apple's worth a hell of a lot more than that, so not as easy to do. Apple could have bought Dell.
Apple could have taken 8 Dell's billion, private.
God, wouldn't it? That would be an interesting move, wouldn't it?
Michael, why don't we give your money back to the show?
I know. Yeah. I love that. Gee, Michael.
Yeah. Oh, sort of.
Neener, neener, neener. That is kind of funny. Apple takes 3 of top 5 spots in the mobile phone sales for quarter four, 2012. People were thinking, oh, maybe Android. No, man, Apple. While Android is providing some competition, Apple has really dominated. This is the iPhone 5, 4S, and 4 are doing very, very well, according to the NPD group. The iPhone 5 is first place, the iPhone 4S third place, the iPhone fourth place. And, of course, Apple is the best overall selling smartphone maker, accounting for 39% of smartphone sales. Samsung, in case you're interested, 30%. Not Android. Samsung. Yeah. Samsung is increasingly looking like the Apple of, it's an Apple-Samsung battle. Net applications also, they monitor via the usage, net usage. Their monthly report on mobile OS share found that Apple iOS increased slightly, accounting for 61% of all mobile operating systems, Android slight dip. 25%.
That's one of the interesting problems Apple has now, if you want to call it a problem, is that their products have become seasonal. When a new iPhone comes out, the demand goes huge and they rocket to the top. And then 6 months, 9 months down the road, it's still the same iPhone. And smart competitors are now counter-programming them with new devices towards the end of their lifespan. So we saw like massive Galaxy sales third quarter of last year.
Right.
So that might be why Apple is becoming more open to different schedules or maybe even different models at some point.
Well, in fact, we're going to see the Galaxy S4 probably at Mobile World Congress this month. A lot of rumors about the S4. It sounds like a very exciting phone for Android users. And then the rumor that the iPhone Math or whatever the hell they're going to call this. Your website, Renee, is the king of rumors these days.
Thank you.
What do you hear?
My again, it's really hard to hear most of the stuff that leaks from Apple is for existing products because they ramp up the factories and a lot of stuff comes out of Foxconn. New products are much harder to predict because nothing leaks out until Apple is ready for it. But both the cheaper iPhone or the less expensive iPhone and the bigger iPhone start to make sense. We did some math and we figured out that if you take the existing iPhone display and you stretch it up to 5 inches, it ends up being exactly the same screen density as the iPad 4. And that's interesting because the iPad mini did the opposite. It took the iPad resolution down to the iPhone density. So Apple is already buying those screens in huge quantities. I put up some mock-ups so that you can actually, and I put them in the document, you can actually click on them and load up what the interface would look like on your phone. So you can see what a 20% larger iOS interface would look like.
It's a lot like a Galaxy Note.
It is. It's right in between the Galaxy S and the Galaxy Note. And yep. It is usable, it's especially for people with accessibility issues who find the existing iPhone text and buttons too small. It'll be a boon. But it's not comically large either, which is something I was worried about.
So it has several advantages. It doesn't fragment the market because it's the same. You know, it's an existing resolution. It solves that we don't have a big screen phone problem. I love this. Remember, I'm the one who's saying Apple should do an iPad mini with a phone in it.
And then if you look at it, you have an 11-inch MacBook Air, a 13-inch MacBook Air, a 13-inch MacBook Pro, and a 15-inch MacBook Pro. You have a 4-inch iPhone, a 5-inch iPhone, a 7.9-inch iPad, and a 9.7-inch iPad.
Yeah.
Marco Arment also had a good blog post on it that also explains that pretty well. But it's also fun. It's going to be fun to like sort of rewind every commentator that was saying that no, there's no need for Apple to ever make a larger phone because they're silly and it's just marketing hype that doesn't have any practical benefit to it. I'd be very, very pleased if Apple comes out with a larger phone.
Look at the size. In every way, this is a very attractive phone. Now, Tim Cook did kind of poo-poo it. He said, look, we're very happy with the iPhone 5 design. We think it's exactly the right size because you can still use one hand and reach all the way across it.
Not all the way up, but okay.
That's what he always said. I mean, like, there's no one wants to see video on their iPod. No one wants a 7-inch exactly. iPad.
Yeah. When you only have the ability to make one phone a year, what else are you going to say except for the one phone we made is the best one that is the one phone that anyone ever wanted. It's the best one that could possibly be made.
Right.
So he wouldn't have to eat crow by coming out with a new phone. As a matter of fact, he would do again one of those signature, we listened to you, we gave you the larger phone. You're welcome.
Today Apple invents
Apple invents the large phone.
Yeah.
And some people are worried about one handed ease of use, but that's not necessarily a hardware problem. Apple is very good at software. And with the iPad mini, the bezel disappeared, but they used software to reject palm touches. And if you look at BlackBerry 10, for example, there's a lot of interesting things you can do with software to make larger screen devices still easy to use with one hand.
Yeah. Also, I mean, there's a case to be made that it's not as though making a phone that can be used one-handed is the end-all be-all that motivator that's going to have to drive every aspect of this device. I mean, there is nothing about, for me personally, there's nothing about a larger phone that is a disadvantage compared to what appears to me to be a very, very tiny screen that's on other phones right now. It's okay, given that even on the iPhone 5, I can't really operate it one-handed. The fact that there's a keyboard technology in the Android phone that makes it easier to type one-handed, even though it's a wider sweep, makes it easier to use. The fact that the keyboard is larger physically makes the targets larger for me and easier to hit. So it's not as I really don't know why Apple keeps saying that everybody wants a phone that has to be able to use one completely one-handed.
'Cause that's what they make, Andy.
Exactly. Yeah. and you know what the signature move is going to be like when they roll this out. We have the greatest movie library, the greatest TV library, and now we have the greatest screen on a mobile device to show it off on. You're welcome.
Apple TV rumors too flying. There's an FCC filing revealing an Apple TV with slightly smaller dimensions. Some say it's just an internal upgrade with no difference in size.
That's true.
You think that's going to be the case?
Well, it is the case. I mean, the FCC documents were referring to the device without the external shell. When you add the external shell to it, it's the same. The most interesting thing about this is it's a complete stealth update. You're just going to one day go to the store and you'll get the Apple TV 3.2 instead of 3.1. But if you look, Brian Klug at Antec and Matthew Panzerino from The Next Web did a lot of sleuthing on this. And the interesting thing, it looks like they might be using a die-shrunk A5X processor in this as a limited test run. Now, maybe that's to try a non-Samsung manufacturer, or maybe that's to try out something that they might want to use in the iPad mini, because if that ever goes Retina, you're going to need that X for the extended graphics capability of pushing around all those pixels. And it makes a lot of sense. They did that previously with the die-shrunk A5 chip that went into the iPad 2 and was eventually put into the iPad 2. So that device is not very interesting from an Apple TV point of view, but it's very interesting for a what's Apple going to do in 2013 point of view.
The A5X is the same as in the iPhone 5?
iPad 3. It's the same iPad chip, but 3. It was so big and hot in that body that it didn't really work out, and they went to the A6X. But a die-shrunk A5X might be a good or an economical choice for a Retina iPad mini. Although I hope not. I hope it'll be an A6X or something new.
Yeah.
But it's one possibility.
So Apple TV could take advantage of that extra processing power to do something like, for instance, put HBO Go. That's the other rumor on it. That would be very interesting. Now, if you have HBO Go, now you still have to have a cable subscription currently to use HBO Go. But that would put all your
HBO. House of Cards changes that.
Yeah, Netflix House of Cards. Got to be putting a little pressure on the old HBO.
Yeah. Also, a lot of people don't know that cable companies will break out HBO from most packages if you ask them. When I went through the whole changing your cable service plan is like refinancing a home sometimes. And it wasn't until like hour four of the negotiations when I was upgrading my bandwidth here that I found out that, oh, well, instead of essentially spending like $30 for this package because I only want one channel of HBO, I can actually just get HBO for $10. Oh, cancel everything but the one channel of HBO. Thank you.
Game of Thrones, ho. Yeah.
Although the secret is you do have to essentially say, knowing full well you have no intention of canceling HBO, you have to say, hi, I'd like to cancel HBO.
Right.
And you can hear the rustling as they turn to the page of the script. Right. Oh, dear, I'm sorry. Why do you want to cancel HBO?
Because
I don't want to spend $40 for these eight channels. Well, flip. Did you know that?
Yeah. Just call retention.
Who's your cable company, just so we know?
Verizon Fios.
Verizon.
Okay. So
that may not be the case with some other cable companies. Yeah. We don't know.
And I'll take this opportunity to say that Verizon was actually very... Every time I've made a service change on devices that I've owned with Verizon, they've done a really good job.
Andy, I just want to point out, you have never looked so good, and that's thanks to Verizon.
Thank you. I'm using Parker Posey's dermatologist.
It is. I mean, seriously, your skin is smooth, flawless. The tone is excellent. You just look...
The new Mac Mini will be here tomorrow, and we'll see if we can get...
I don't know if we need the new Mac Mini, but I'm glad we got you that. We're getting a dedicated machine with enough horsepower. But it's funny, the frame rate problems we had last week are gone. Your squirrel, I could see every detail on its tail.
It's terrifying.
It's beautiful. Isn't that... this is amazing, the quality we're getting.
As a matter of fact, it's so good. When I saw a frame grab, I'm like, perhaps I should go to Toys R Us and get like a top for Wonder Woman.
Yes.
Now that's maybe a little bit too much detail.
Wow, she looks like one of those body-painted women on Bourbon Street there. Mighty, mighty, mighty Wonder Woman. We knew before Chevy was going to have Siri. Now Honda has announced 2013 Accord and Acura models will have Siri, which that's is a, great. You know, from I think Ford really was the first to introduce this kind of speech-driven interface. It's so much better than reaching down, looking at a screen, twiddling a knob. And I think Siri, to be honest, as good as Ford Sync is, I think Siri's better. So I think the Siri eyes free will be good. I mean, the question is, will it be as powerful a Siri as it is on the iPhone and iPad? And I don't know.
Yeah. Also, there's no real backup. It will be. Siri doesn't work.
You have to have an iPhone 4S or iPhone 5 running iOS 6. Yeah. So it's actually Siri on the phone.
Yeah.
Right. Got it.
Instead of a Bluetooth button, you have a Siri button.
Got it. Mm.
I just hope that we don't see like a ceasefire in the development of better interfaces. I think it's possible to my usual rule of thumb, like when I'm evaluating stuff that's designed car technology, is that here's how long it takes me to adjust the heating in my car. If I can spare 3/4 of a second to glance to the console and press a temperature up, temperature down, fan up, fan down button, and then put my ass back on the road, I don't think that's too much time to be spending looking at a phone screen. But we're talking about a half a second, three quarters of a second. I don't think that it's necessarily impossible to do that or unsafe to do that.
I agree. I can actually press a button on my steering wheel and say cabin temperature 74 degrees, and it does
it. Right. But what I'm saying is I think the one of the big problems is that current phone interfaces are such that it will not take as little as a half a second or three quarters of a second to do anything productive. True. And some of these interfaces that I see on some car dashboard apps, they really do try to make the interface as uncluttered and as simple and as big buttoned as possible. And that's great. When I use Siri for a lot of things, though, oftentimes I have to settle for what Siri can understand as opposed to what I actually want to listen to.
Right.
Where it's like,
no, that's true.
Play the Beatles' White Album.
No, that's true.
Playing the Troggs' White Rider. No. Yeah. Play the Beatles' White Album. Playing the English Beat. No,
Beatles. You do get beaten down eventually.
Road rage against Siri, and then I'm heading for a bridge.
No, that's a good point. In fact, I'm thinking about it. That's how I adjust the temperature. I don't use Siri to do that. Or
my publisher just got the Tesla S, and he was showing off that giant 17-inch screen with our website on it. And if I had that, my eyes would never be on the road.
Yeah. No, it's very distracting.
Yeah.
That Tesla S is amazing. Beautiful, beautiful vehicle.
I'm taking a test drive in a Tesla S tomorrow, as a matter of fact.
You're going to love it.
Check out the interface. Yeah.
I'm very tempted. That's a beautiful car.
Whew. I could never buy a Tesla S.
Well, it's expensive.
This is journalism. I mean, again, it's a big deal when I went from having like the car cassette adapter to the Bluetooth adapter for my vehicle.
Until someone takes Andy private, he's not going to be able to.
Really, it was a choice for me between going to the Super Bowl and buying a Tesla S. So I've already made my decision. I should get a refund, though, because the Niners lost, right? Shouldn't I get some like half of that back?
That's what they do.
A performance fee. You know, it's like half up front, half to win. Like
I feel I should get a refund of some kind.
To show into play.
You should get one of them 800 number lawyers on your side.
Yeah, good. That'll work.
You got to go to a Super Bowl.
I'm just being facetious.
Have you ever been to one?
No, and it was amazing. Uh-huh. What an experience. Just so incredible. Never forget it.
I was an extra once in a Super Bowl movie.
Were you? In a movie?
Black Sunday.
Remember great movie, yeah.
Yeah, in Miami, that's where I grew up. They did filming in the Orange Bowl, and they recruited lots of people to come and be killed by a big, scary blimp that we couldn't see. But it was a lot of fun.
Oh. Yeah, we'll paint that in later.
I was about to say, you got to see the Goodyear blimp from a very unusual perspective.
Yes. Yes, the invisible perspective.
So I didn't ask anybody, and I don't know if it's even the appropriate show to do this, but any thoughts on BlackBerry 10? I think, Andy, did you get to play with one?
I wrote a column about it. I got a demo, as a matter of fact, from the same guy who gave the demo during the press event about a month ago. I'm impressed with a lot of the ideas in there. I saw a lot of basic ideas that I think are really, really quite strong. For an interface that tries to make sure you never have to see an on-screen control unless you really need to see it, it's actually surprisingly effective. The velocity with which you can move through the interface and move through all the different apps, very, very quick using some very simple gestures. I really like the keyboard is phenomenal.
Oh, boy.
I mean, it's...
So
it's,
you had the physical keyboard one, you mean? Not on-screen?
No. The on-screen keyboard.
Really?
The way that it's like we're used to, like on the iPhone, there's... It's like the best fusion of the way that the iPhone does it and the way that Android swipe does it, where on the iPhone, of course, is predictive text where it tries to predict the type where you're trying to type. It will auto-complete it for you if you want. There's the swipe keyboard in which you're sliding from key to key, and in doing so, you're giving more information about what you're trying to type, and Android can use that to make better prediction. With this one, not only does it offer predictions, but it knows it's tracking the velocity of your finger. And if you're typing, THI, it might be thing, it might be this, or it might be Thursday, it might be therefore. And so what it does is it puts the autocomplete, like just as a little hint on the top of the keycap of multiple keys. So because if you're trying to type therefore, then you're probably going to steer towards this way anyway. So if your eye is on the letter E, you say, oh, therefore, that's what I want. Let go. And you get the entire word. So instead of having to keep your eye off of the keyboard, or instead of just getting just one suggest, you can just blow through what you're writing.
How's the hardware feel? Beatmaster wants to know in our chat room. Sturdy?
Cheap? Nice hardware.
Nice.
Yeah, it's a nice tight device. It's small. I mean, we have been saying how wonderful it is that Apple's getting for larger devices and how it's not necessary to have a one handed thing. But BlackBerry seems to be very, very intent on no, this is a one handed device. You don't have we're taking things off the device to make sure that you have a good one handed interface. Feels like a very solid $200 premium smartphone. I don't know how convincing this case is going to be for people who are walking into a phone store of their own volition, because you know we've discussed this time and time again that people go into a phone store really in the U.S. to buy an iPhone, and if they aren't specifically looking for something with an Apple logo on it, they'll find a lot of really great Android phones as alternatives. I'm not really sure that unless their company is saying we want you to buy a BlackBerry or here's a BlackBerry for you to use, that's going to be their first choice. So at this point, all I can say is that I think they have some really very strong fundamental ideas. I love the way that. It's designed so that you don't necessarily have to have the one phone that the IT department controls and has all the company secure information on, and then you have to have a second phone just for your personal stuff, your personal photos, just to make sure that your privacy remains private and that IT can't accidentally remote wipe like your baby pictures because they need to push another app on your device. So again, lots of really strong ideas. Let's see if a year from now it's actually a desirable phone for the majority of people out there, though.
Our sister site, crackberry.com, they cover everything BlackBerry. So, of course, they're super excited about this. They rented an office in Toronto, and they've all been living there 24/7, actually broadcasting at night, like the Big Brother house, their coverage. And they've had the devices for a while, and they've got tons of reviews and videos up. And I've had a chance to see a little bit of it. And it's exactly what Andy says is, I don't know if there's room for it between the iPhones that people want to buy and the Androids that carriers want to sell. But boy, are there some fantastic ideas. And very different ideas like BlackBerry Flow, and when you can peek at the notifications and then keep gesturing for the messages, or you can go the other way and see the tiles or keep going and seeing the apps. There is a discoverability curve, just like the playbook, because when you have a gesture-based operating system, if you just hand the phone to somebody, it's not instinctive how to use it. There's no big buttons to push. But if they educate people well and if they show it, I went to the stores this morning to see it launched in Canada today. So I went to the carriers this morning to see how it was doing, and all of their stock had been pre-reserved. They were actually a wide demographic of people who were buying it. They were being shown how to put the battery in, how to use the basic functions, because there's a gesture even to turn the screen back on. And the carriers were doing a really good job educating mainstream people to it. So it looks like there's some interest. I just don't know how much. I mean, Microsoft hasn't gotten any traction in 2 years, so I don't know how.
Well, Jimmy the Geek has a good point in the chat room. He says it's going to really be a battle for third place between Windows Phone and BlackBerry. That's really where.
But that's okay. I mean, I think that it's kind of gauche for any of us to think, oh, haha, you only have the third best-selling phone in the world.
That's fine.
Yeah, well, you're still making tens of millions of dollars in profit. Yeah. I'm sure that you and your shareholders are perfectly fine. And the other thing that I think people get too hung up on is discoverability and the ease of learning. Because I think that there are two different sides to a device that or a piece of software that's easy to use. One really important part of it is how easy it is to learn it when you get this thing out of the box and you're going through those first days and even first couple of weeks of frustration as you're trying to figure out, I just want to answer a phone call. How the hell do I answer a phone call? But then there's, once you've learned how to the basics of how to use the device, there's the ease of use that extends to a year from now when I'm looking at an email and I want to put that into Evernote. How many clicks, how many swipes, how difficult is it for me to turn this into an Evernote? Can I simply highlight it and then simply dump it off the screen and throw it into Evernote? Can I tap
it? I like that Evernote integration. That sounds pretty cool.
Can I tap it, then tap a share button and say send to Evernote? Or do I have to say select all, copy, switch apps, Evernote, new note, paste in. Yeah. I mean, there are all kinds of different kinds of ease of use.
I'm very tempted to buy one, to be honest.
I had a chance to talk to Torsten Heinz, the CEO of BlackBerry at CES, and he reminded me of the old school Ed Colligan, because he was saying, you know, I counted every tap and every swipe it takes to get something done in other operating systems, and he tried them all. He had all the different phones, and he was intent on making a very quick experience, and he believes there's space in that. He believes that there are interface answers that other people haven't provided and that BlackBerry still has room for. And again, win, lose, or fail, if those ideas become popular and if they end up elsewhere, like the keyboard is an update of Swipe. It's BlackBerry's version of Swipe, and that's really interesting. So hopefully those ideas will filter down.
You know, I just went to AT&T's website, and there's a big shop button. I'm not logged in, but there's a big shop now button. And what does it pull you to? It pulls you to an iPhone 5. It does not pull. It does not show you any other phones when you press shop now. You actually have to click further to get more than an iPhone. So you're exactly right, Andy. This is tough for any phone that's not an Android or an iPhone, because they're just nobody's going to show it to you unless you say, "I'm here to look at the new BlackBerry."
And boy, if you talk about the difference between two companies, RIM, now they changed their name to BlackBerry, they brought Kevin Michaluk, who runs a CrackBerry site, up onto stage. He said he was not going to cut his hair until BlackBerry 10 launched. They brought him up on stage and cut his ponytail during the event. And you would never see that happen at WWDC.
That's awesome.
Yeah, but you'd also never see you never see the sort of pre-show that they put on for the BlackBerry 10 event. Where it felt like, I don't know, like a off-market version of a New Year's Rock and Eve countdown. Like someone who desperately wants to be Ryan Seacrest but isn't. And like, you're not going to entertain us with somebody with a new girl band that debuted
Alicia
a year
Keys
ago.
Alicia Keys is not the boss of me.
No. Get, if you got Alicia Keys, give us Alicia Keys. Don't give us the guy who was interviewing and cutting some ponytail off. And the other thing was, it's like, if this were an Apple event, not that they have to do things the way that Apple did, but you know, there's the clearly the scripted but still not embarrassing bit in which they're talking about, hey, well, Alicia, we know that we used to be a big BlackBerry fan, but we lost you to like a competitor a couple years ago. And Alicia say, well, I have to admit that my head was turned by something sexier and newer and younger, but you know, you kept in touch and I kept looking. I'm like, oh my god, the curtains are gonna part, there's gonna piano back there, she's gonna start playing. But then after we got back in touch, I started to think about the things I loved about you, and you changed since then, and everything I didn't like about you made me love you all over again. No, she should be singing. We got Tony Bennett. We got U2. We got the Foo Fighters, for God's sakes. Learn from Apple, people.
It just costs a little bit more.
Well, that was the same thing with the ads. I mean, like, they have to educate people how to use this gesture UI, but their ad is 90% people walking and 10% phone instead of 90% phone and 10% people walking.
Same problem, by the way, with Windows 8. You got a gesture. I think you nailed it when you said gesture-based UIs have poor discoverability, and you got to do something about that. You got to make it easy. Yeah.
It's like keyboard shortcuts with no mouse.
Right. Exactly. From iMore, Mr. Renee Ritchie is here from smile.com. Gene McDonald from the Chicago Sun-Times. Andy Anaka, we are going to get your picks of the week in just a moment. But first, may I pick audible.com? Had long plane flights, a lot of time. I got to the Super Bowl. The minute they opened the gates at 1 o'clock, didn't leave till 10. There was a game in there, but for most of the time, I was just sitting there. Thank goodness for audible.com, a great place to listen to the best books in the world, 100,000 strong. Great titles. All the new books now come out on audible.com. They've got business books, classics, fiction and history, books for kids and young adults, mysteries, thrillers, romance, science and technology, a great sci-fi selection. Thanks to Audible and their Audible Frontiers program, they're recording a lot of classic sci-fi now, self-development, and a lot more. I'm listening to book two of the King Killer Chronicles, Patrick Rothfuss's amazing trilogy, the third book of which has not yet been written. I'm deeply hoping he finishes it before I finish book two, and that may happen, given how long it is.
I'm a few hours into book one.
So it's good. Is it not good?
Yes. So good.
This is the book Trey Ratcliffe said, if you read this and don't like this, I cannot be your friend anymore.
I'm now 9 hours and 7 minutes in. I still have 18 hours to go.
Oh, you're about a third of the way in. That's the name of the wind. That one's 27 hours and 58 minutes. The second book is 42 hours and 59 minutes. Oh. Wow.
Can't wait.
Yeah. And it's holding up. It's very good, very well written. Kind of a sword and sorcery fantasy world, but mild fantasy, very much like Game of Thrones, where there's a little bit of magic, but not a huge amount. It's really about characters and plot, and very, very beautifully written. But if you're not into that kind of thing, there's many other good choices. I think my next one's going to be Silver Linings Playbook. I really like the movie, and apparently the book is even better. It predated the movie, of course, and it's apparently even better. So that's another great choice.
I got stuck at the airport because of freezing rain, and I had almost no battery life left, and I listened to Audible the entire time because it takes so little battery that I lasted 19 hours on.
Isn't that awesome? And the Audible app on the iPhone is a must because your entire library is available to you. They have an Android and Windows phone and even a Metro version for Windows 8. Andy, what are you listening to these days?
I hate to sound so lame, but sometimes I will like a movie so much, and if it's based on a book, I will wind up actually getting the book and reading that. I finally got around to seeing The Descendants, that George Clooney movie.
That's such a good movie. Good.
Yeah. And it was directed by the same guy who did Sideways with Paul Giamatti. Mm-hmm. And it's the same kind of a story about a middle-aged man who's at kind of a sad point in his life. And it's not his life, his death, his struggles. It's here is one specific short period of time that basically teaches you all about this person, how they react to the world around them. And so it's available. It's based on a book, based on a really wonderful book. But download the book, and it just adds so much, like Sideways, which is a first person book. It just adds so much texture and so much. It really does live as a separate sort of thing. And not giving anything away, it's not the sort. It's like Sideways. It's not the sort of story where once you know who the killer is. You know, once you find out the identity of Kaiser Soze, the entire movie is over with, and you're done with it. It is actually.
I still don't know who was Kaiser Soze, so don't tell me.
Nobody does. I realize we're talking about Audible here, but my God, I bought it on. I wound up having to buy it on Blu-ray and then Blu-ray and DVD and ripping a copy, and I must have seen that movie in the past 2 years at least twice a month because it's just such a great.
We're talking about The Usual Suspects. Or
talking about The Usual Suspects. Yeah, The Descendants. But The Descendants also. But
another good movie, but not The Usual Suspects. Good. That's unusually good.
What I'm saying is that even if you've seen the movie, even if you're familiar with the basic storyline, the fact that it's more like a different telling of the story that adds that's a totally unique experience in and of itself.
I'm completely with you, and I usually try to listen to the book before I see the movie, but in both cases. Silver Linings Playbook and Descendants. Yeah. I did not.
And there are a lot of audiobooks exactly like that, where it's not quite very safe to watch a movie while you're driving. But you know, if you've already seen the movie, hearing the audiobook gives you that same sort of, hey, I really enjoyed this story. I want to enjoy the story again. Right. I just don't want to drive off a cliff while I'm enjoying this movie inside the car.
Highly recommended. Look, here's the deal. You can get a book free and get an idea of what Audible could be for you. It's something important in my life, I got to tell you. And Renee Ritchie's and Andy Anakos. How about you, Gene?
Books?
Audiobooks.
Yes.
Have you done that yet? Have you gotten in them
commute,
yet?
I commute, so when I go on a road trip, I do
it's
get
great.
Them.
It's great for flying and driving.
I would get The Life of Pi right now if I was going on a because I read it a long time ago. Then I saw the movie, which was
but
amazing.
I got to tell you, the Audible version of Life of Pi is the definitive. Yes.
Okay.
If you haven't read the book, absolutely must listen to Audible's Life of Pi. Incredible.
Okay, then I'm totally
incredible. In fact, it's often the book I recommended for your first Audible book.
That's interesting.
So if you like the movie and you haven't read the novel, you must get the audio version. Audible.com/MacBreak will get you a book free. You're going to sign up for the gold account. That's the normal book a month subscription. However, your first month's free. Your first book is free. And you can cancel at any time, pay nothing, and still keep the book forever. The other thing you get, by the way, when you do a subscription is you can get the daily version of the Wall Street Journal or the New York Times as well. And that's a really good reason to get a subscription. That's all part of the subscription. Audible.com/MacBreak. Give it a try today. We've just given you about 18 great books. Hundreds of hours of listening. Now you just have to pick one. Audible.com/MacBreak. We thank them for their support of MacBreak Weekly. Andy Yanako, your pick of the week.
Short and simple and kind of old. I finally got around to selecting the winner of the long podcast downloader app for iOS pageant after finally being so frustrated with the Apple podcast app. That's like, now I got to try them. A category that I didn't really care much about. Now I have to try every single one of them. The clear winner for me is Downcast. I want an app where I want to be able to do is add podcasts to it. And after I add podcasts to it, I want it to automatically download them on a schedule that I can control. And that when I, again, get into the car or start taking my walk, I want to be able to launch the app, hit play, and it's automatically playing the podcast that I like in the order in which, starting with the newest ones, ending with the oldest ones. And if there's a podcast I don't really get to immediately, I want to replace that 3-week-old podcast with a brand new one. And oh God, so many of these apps screw up something or other. This is just the most simple, direct, and it's also very clean. It's very pretty, and also doesn't hurt that they have a version of it. The same version that you buy for the iPhone, it's also for the iPad that actually expands the interface and makes it more of a really cool console app too. So hands down, my favorite. There are others that are very, very good, especially if you want to have something that's multi-platform. If you want one for your Android stuff, one for your iOS stuff, one for your desktop. But for a good replacement for the podcast player, that functionality that Apple effectively removed from your device by adding a really, really crummy player app, it's Downcast.
It does video too. Really recommend it. It is absolutely, I agree with you 100%. There's some other good choices, but Downcast is the one I use as well. That's from Jamakanaw Productions. Jamakanaw
Enterprises.
And you know what? AppStore.com/Downcast works for this one. AppStore.com/Downcast.
I was about to say that kind of defeats the purpose. Say, now all I have to do is remember. Instead of that long URL, you're never going to remember, just remember www.appstore Jamakanaw.
Actually, appstore.com/downcast does work, thank goodness. For those of you who can't spell Jamakanaw. Renee Ritchie, your pick of the week.
I have 1.5. I have follow-up from a previous pick. I mentioned Anostyle a few weeks ago. They'll take your iPhone and they'll re-anodize it in any color that you want. But since I'm not a Kardashian and didn't think I could pull off gold, I asked them if they could do real black, because the current iPhone is slate. It's not black. Right. And they hadn't done it before. So I bought a new iPhone and told them to experiment with it.
Ooh.
And they put 4 layers, military-grade anodization on the back of it. So it is no longer chipping like my original iPhone. And it's still understated. It's not. I mean, they'll do red or orange or whatever color you want, but I stuck with the black, and it turned out better than I thought it would. I'm very happy with it.
Anostyle.com.
Yes,
Renee, you are exactly. And I mean this in the most positive way. You are exactly the reason why Apple customers are the greatest customers in the world, because they're not happy with black. They have a perfect shade of black in mind, and they're willing to put themselves through trouble to get exactly the right shade of black. You could be Joni Ives' assistant.
It's a really good. It will void your warranty. That's people ask about that, because if it's a different color, if you take a bright orange iPhone back to Apple, they might not be happy with you.
They won't
you.
Trade it back in.
But yeah. if you're interested in something different, my pick of the week though is something actually quite different. It's a game that Arnold Kim from Mac Rumors turned me onto at Macworld, and it ended up causing a lot of fun for a lot of people. It's called Space Team.
Oh, I love Space Team. You got to come over. We can have a Space Team party.
I should have done it last week. I was negligent. Oh. It would have been so much fun. So you basically connect over Bluetooth or Wi-Fi, and then you take turns. It gives you instructions, and they're either for your device or for the other person's device. You've got to yell out instructions and try and find them on your screen, and the whole interface breaks apart while you're playing. It's incredibly stressful, but incredibly fun. And especially watching a bunch of Apple press people playing this during the off hours and just losing
their mind. It's hysterical. It's hysterical.
Yes.
And you're shouting.
Yes.
And it's a family thing, iPad or iPhone.
Oh, my goodness.
Asteroid as well.
It's not. It's fun. It's fun. It's like a Pit or one of those other family fun games where you're all shouting.
Step one of the installation guide is take any guns or sharp knives out of the room.
No. It's not competitive. It's really cooperative.
Have any family arguments before you start playing this game.
You have to cooperate to make it work, and it's really fun, I have to say. We tried several times to make it work here, and it crashed every time on us. But we were using it via Wi-Fi. I think Bluetooth is probably a better choice.
Yeah. And it worked great. We tried it at a party. We tried it at Moscone. It was just phenomenal.
And it's free, right?
Yep.
But although they do have in-app, 99-cent in-app purchases. I love Space Team. Henry Smith, appstore.com/Space Team works as well.
Nice.
Gene McDonald, Smile Software. What's your pick of the week?
I have to go with OmniFocus this week.
Even
though they had no booth, they put on an all-day OmniFocus, basically a mini conference.
I would like to do that.
With their extra super OmniFocus ninjas.
You almost need to have some training to use this thing. It's so powerful.
Well, that was but the end of the day, they showed off OmniFocus 2, which is going into beta right now. And they acknowledge that, yes, you need, like, you know, you practically need a 2-week course to understand right. how to use OmniFocus. And the beta looks fantastic for two. They definitely made things more obvious. And they're also going with a pro and a standard edition. So if you're not going to be like the super tweaker GTD person, you might just be happy with the standard. And then they made OmniFocus 1 free now. So if you wanted to start using OmniFocus before the new OmniFocus 2 goes live, you can get it for free. And I think it is hard to use, but I have finally hit my stride in OmniFocus, and I'm really excited about it.
So you know how to, you're good, and you know how to use it.
I don't know if I'm good, but I'm better, and I understand why people find it hard to get started, because I've had it since it was, OmniFocus 1 since it came out, and I've never quite gotten it, but certain combination of screencasts that I've watched and books that I've read, I get it now, and I think it's worth it, so... if you're interested, I would go to OmniFocus. I don't know if you can still sign up to be on the beta, but you could definitely get OmniFocus 1 for free, which I think is worth if you'd been thinking about trying it out.
I didn't realize that you could get it for free. That is a good idea. Now's your chance to do it. So I, as you many of you know, upgraded my MacBook Pro Retina with the Otherworld Computing Aura Pro, which is a great SSD drive. A little faster, a little bigger. I went to 250 gigs. And then one of the things I got with it, which is awesome, and you can buy this standalone, is an enclosure for the old SSD drive. Oh. So, you say, well, I bought a Retina with a 256 gig drive, I think, or something like that. I didn't want to waste it. So you pop it in this. This is awesome. This is like machined aluminum. And now it's got a USB 3 interface to the solid state drive. This is awesome. Super fast. It's almost as fast as the internal drive. And now you've got an external drive that you can attach to your laptop. So really, really nicely designed, very elegant. If you're going to buy the Aura Pro SSD and take it out of your existing MacBook Air or MacBook Pro with Retina, then you definitely want to get the external case and upgrade it. It really is fantastic. I'm trying to see what the pricing on the standalone of the external case is. It's just really nicely done.
It's very nice looking.
Isn't it beautiful?
Yeah.
Let me see if I can find it here. VoY Pro. VoY Pro. Envoy is what they call it. $79.99. Good price. You need to have that particular Mac SSD drive. So it's really only going to be for people who have upgraded their Mac SSD drive. It's bus powered, USB 3, and it's so elegant looking. So beautiful. Machined aluminum. And you need that because you have to have some cooling aspects to it. So this will work with the modules in the 2012 13 and 15 inch MacBook Pro with Retina, not for the Air, I guess. You could buy this and then buy the SSD from them, the Aura Pro SSD, and put it in, and then you'd have this. What I'm going to do with this, I think it's 250 gigs, is I'm going to use this as for my photos when I travel, because it's light, bus-powered, and that'll be an external drive I can use in my photos. Envoy Pro from Otherworld Computing. Were they at Macworld? I hope they were. Sales? They're the best. They're fantastic.
They had a smallish booth on the left-hand corner.
Right. I still buy all my stuff from them. As always, they have the instructions. It comes with the Torx screwdriver that you need to both open your computer and open this, and so you don't need a special screwdriver. And there's a video on the Otherworld site that shows you what it looks like and all that stuff. And the speeds I was getting are just phenomenal. It's basically on USB 3, it's the same speed as an internal. It's just really great. All right, that's it for our edition of Mac Break Weekly, the post Macworld episode. So nice to have you, Gene. You going back to Oregon next?
Yes, I am.
And to have in the studio audience, Oliver. Good to have you as well. Oliver Breidenbach from Boinks, B-O-I-N-X. They make great video switching software. And, of course, iStop Motion, which is a must-have for the iPad or the Mac. You got to have it. Great program. Gene, smilesoft.com. Smilesoftware.com. And, of course, Text Expander, which I don't know how anybody lives without. It's the main reason I don't use Windows. And no, it's not the only reason. And of course, PDF Pen and PDF Pen Pro. Do you have any, is there a new, anything new coming along you want to tease? She can't. Nope. She's blinking at me. She won't. She can't. She won't. Thank you for being here, Gene. Thank you, Andy Yanako from the Chicago Sun-Times. Thank you to Verizon Fios for making you look so marvelous. And are you recommending The Lost Squadron as your movie pick of the week? Is that why that's on the screen behind you?
I'm definitely recommending the movie poster.
That's a great poster.
Quite an awesome poster, especially this guy right here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a 1932 action film starring Richard Dix, Mary Astor, and Robert Armstrong.
Exactly.
With the best poster ever. I've never seen the movie, but I do like the...
Erich von Stroheim.
Ah, Erich von Stroheim. Yeah. RKO radio. I like the beginning of those RKO radio pictures. I want to kind of use that as a... Yeah, I almost use that as our twit beginning, because it has a radio tower and lightning bolts coming out of it. And it goes, dee, dee, dee. I thought that would have been great for Twit. But then I thought, oh, there's probably still somebody to sue me over that. Hey, thank you, everybody, for being here. We do Mac Break Weekly at 11 a.m. Pacific when I'm here on time. I wasn't again, but I will next week because I'm canceling that class that I've been going to. It's been making me late. 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern time. That's 1900 UTC on twit.tv. If you want to watch live, you can get audio and video versions after the fact, though. We make on-demand versions available on our website, twit.tv/MBW. Or on iTunes, or on our new YouTube channel, youtube.com/MacBreakWeekly. Is that right, Chad? MacBreakWeekly, yes.
Yes.
Yeah, all three words. And you can subscribe there so you'll always get an automatic email when there's new shows available. We got quite a few on there now. That's good.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, the main Twit channel is youtube.com/twit. That has directory that listing for all the shows and their individual YouTube channels. We move them to individual channels just so that you could subscribe to show by show instead of getting every show in your feed, just to make it easier. Hey, thanks, everybody. Time to get back to work now. Break time is over.